Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform with one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite.
Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/stereo. netsuite.com/stereo.
The emotion was that I didn't really have words, because as long as I've been doing this, it still feels like the click of a finger. You know, I can take myself back to being a kid and putting F1 in this dream world.
Welcome everyone to Beyond the Grid with me, Tom Clarkson. This week, my guest is one of Formula One's biggest stars. He's a driver who can mix it with the very best on track, and he's peerless off it. His personality shines bright in everything that he does, and never more than when he's on the podium. Shooey, anyone? The man I'm talking about is, of course, Daniel Ricciardo. Daniel's been on the show before, back in 2019. And since then, a lot's happened. Most significantly, he's moved to McLaren and he's already won his first race for the team at Monza of all places. We talk about lots of different things in this episode, both on and off the racetrack. And as the Formula One circus decamps to Austin this week, it's also a good time to talk about his passion for all things American. As ever, Daniel is open, engaging, and great fun. I hope you enjoy our conversation. Daniel, how are things?
Hello, Thomas.
Daniel Joseph, how are you?
Well done. Things are good. Things are good, yeah.
It's been 2 years since you were last on the pod. Can you sum up the last 24 months for me?
Oh, well, I feel we've lost a bit of it through COVID. Like, it's like, where did a year go in a way? But a lot's happened. A lot has certainly happened. I remember we were in a hotel room in Abu Dhabi.
Eating chips.
And salmon, come on. I did have grilled salmon, I remember. And
if you're listening, Zach. Yeah.
No, I was. Don't make me sound bad. I've got a very good memory.
Like, you were. Crazy. Yes, he was eating salmon.
But there was chips as well. And I was obviously wearing black and yellow, and now I'm in papaya. And so a lot's happened, but also away from racing, the world's a bit of a different place. But fortunately, it's coming back to some normality.
What did you learn? What have you learned during lockdown? Let's start off track.
Yeah, initially I learned, you know, I was 3 months on the farm in Australia. And as much as I loved that alone time and that space, you know, I learned how much I miss the sport and how much I love it. So, yeah, being deprived of it felt kind of good, because it made me really hungry to come back into it. So, yeah, it's like, in a way, you don't know what you got till it's gone, that kind of thing. And not that I had obviously contemplated retiring or anything like that, but, you know, it does make you question, like, all right, well, how much will I miss it? And not having it for a few months, I was like, man, I miss this a lot. So, yeah, it was nice to have that feeling, nice to know how much I care about it.
That's the sport. But for people who don't know about the farm.
Oh, yeah.
Where are we? We're in Western Australia, near Perth. How close to Perth?
12 hours away.
Yes. So just around the corner.
Yeah, so I kind of turned that into a racing answer, but yeah, so it's in Western Australia, and I got it a few years ago, not crazy long, maybe like 4 years ago, and it's something I always wanted as a kid. I love space, and I've always been into like dirt bikes and stuff, so even just the ability to put music loud and not have a neighbor, you know, to kind of complain, you know, having that space, I've just always been I guess, fascinated with it. And I love the outback. I love nature and all that. And so, yeah, the farm, got that. And it's just been, it's probably been the best purchase I've ever, you know, made in my life, no matter how big or small. And it was just, it's been great to also get my friends, you know, when I do get home, my friends come out there and we can just catch up. You know, there's no other distractions. We're not out in a restaurant or a bar, and it's just us on the farm, whether it's by a little fire or just having a few beers. It's kind of perfect for what I want. Also to keep our, I guess, like, friendships really healthy, and again, not have other distractions, and just catch up, if you know what I mean, and talk real stuff, and have a few laughs uninterrupted. It's cool.
I'm hearing a rumor that you're quite good on a, is it a 110 off-road bike?
110, right? Yeah, a little 110.
Can you handle the power, mate?
So I love bikes, and I've been, a tragic? Yeah, is that the word? Like a wannabe tragic, or a you know, as a kid, I loved BMXing, like BMX bikes, and we would, with friends, you know, on a weekend, would build jumps, and I'd get 2 feet of air and think I was going to be pro. But there was always a fascination with two wheels and just like jumping, and just, I don't know, that feeling of like kind of floating through the air, even though I haven't really ever done anything that big. But so then now I love dirt bikes. I rode a dirt bike. I was quite old, you know, when I first rode a proper dirt bike, because mum was very anti two wheels, which I don't blame her. Getting her to allow me to do four wheels was already a big task. I thought I'd be good on a dirt bike. Truth is, I'm not that good, not good at all, really. So then come these 110s. So they're mini dirt bikes, but they're kind of the craze now. Like, adults are riding them, and it's like it's basically a motorized, like, mountain bike, really. And if you're not that good, you can get away with it because we're big and we can throw them around. So anyway,
big air
110s. Yeah, I hit a few ramps last year. I was pretty stoked. Yeah, I love it. I just love bikes, and it's also the freedom. It reminds me when I started go-karting, you know, that you have that freedom, the wind in your kind of face, and I get that back on like a motorbike.
What about the journal? I remember start of lockdown, you talked about writing a journal. You know, are you going to try and take our jobs? What's going on? Are you still writing it?
Yeah, it's a personal journal, you know, and it's more just for me to hold myself accountable, or to learn about myself. What you end up doing, or what I found with a journal, is you don't even have a plan. You just put pen to paper, and then it's like, oh, wow. Oh, this is why I haven't been sleeping well. It's because this is on my mind, or I've been really happy with this, or I've got to make more effort with that. It can be racing related. It can be life related. But yeah, it's just been a nice thing to do. And I'm still, you know, guilty of not doing it often enough. But it's cool. Normally on flights, you know, I think when you're up in an airplane, you're really having alone time. Not many other distractions up there, so that's a good time to journal.
You don't find that as soon as they shut the door, fast asleep?
Well, that's sometimes...
Every time.
Sometimes why I'm not always writing.
Maybe it's an age thing.
No, I am envious though. So my mum's one that literally, you know, as you say, shut the doors and she's asleep. She doesn't remember takeoff or landing.
Now, what about live music? I know you're a massive fan. How much have you missed that during the pandemic?
A lot, like a dramatic amount. Yeah, that's been difficult because I think on your, let's say on the, call it tougher days or harder days, there is certain things you miss, whether it's family, whether it's a bit of a social life. And that's something where music's always given me this, I guess, like, beautiful escape. If I feel good, it'll make me feel better. And if I don't feel that good, it'll make me feel better. And I don't know, it's weird because I didn't grow up playing instruments. I don't have any music background, but I know that I have like a connection with music because it changes the way I feel. And I love watching someone, yeah, just perform. And
can you sing?
No. I mean, I try, but I mean, I try as in, you know, I'm a shower singer, and if I'm in the car by myself, I'll sing, but I'm not, I wouldn't say I sing. I make noises. But also, you know, you'll look around, say the venue, and everyone is engaged in the performance, you know, so it's, everyone's there with a kind of level of calmness and happiness, and it's even that itself, like the crowd itself, makes the experience quite nice.
And do you get the same experience when you're watching live sport, UFC, for example? I mean, such a different thing. Bad example, but you know, when you're watching any other live sport that's not motor race.
Most sports I watch are pretty intense, but no, it's a different experience, you know. But I guess that's probably answering it. I do feel when I watch another sport, I feel my heart rate go up, you know, especially if I'm invested in someone and I want someone to win or do well, then yeah, I can feel I'm starting to get nervous or anxious for them. And I'm a nail biter. I've been trying to stop for a long time, but yeah, I'll find myself bite my nails or whatever. And so I do get invested, even if I try not to.
So look, for people listening to this, what's Daniel Ricciardo listening to at the minute?
I hate this question. It's so tough.
Pick two.
It's broad. It's very there's... I feel bad because I'm always going to leave someone out who I like, but okay, so...
Well, direct someone to your playlists.
Oof. All right, well, okay, so one guy, so I was listening to him basically all through my August break, and it was just the perfect kind of summer break music. Fred Again is his name, English, and it's just beautiful, happy. I mean, I guess it's like electronic-styled music, but I don't know the specific genre. I don't want to butcher it. But then there's Gang of Youths, an Australian band who I love. They're slowly releasing some songs now to get ready for their new album, so they've all been great and a little bit different to their previous album, so I'm really liking that.
Is it new music for you, or, you know, like the Stones, the Rolling Stones are playing at COTA? I think it's the end of November, isn't it? Really bad timing, so we're not there for the race. But I mean, would you still get a kick out of watching them?
Yeah, I would. I do tend to lean away from, I guess, like the pop, I'll just call them like pop bands or pop artists, because for me, maybe I'm a bit of a, I don't know, like a snob or something with this, but it's kind of too obvious. It's like, oh yeah, everyone knows them, or everyone, and it's not that I don't like them, but I would much rather see kind of an unknown artist and I guess appreciate where they are. And it's also exciting if you kind of see someone on, maybe on the come up.
And to put a motor racing leaning on that, do you enjoy looking at young drivers coming through? Do you take a lot of interest in what's going on in Formula 3, Formula 4?
I watch, you know, on definitely on race weekends, you know, particularly if there's F2, F3 on the same schedule, then I'm watching those races, because I might also be looking at maybe that's a good corner to pass or something. So I'm trying to also gain information for myself, but I'm a fan. So I just enjoy watching the races. And you know, in F2, there's been Oscar Piastri, who's been doing really well, and F3, a couple other Aussies as well, with Jack and Callan, and they've been doing well and whatever. So it's been cool to also, like, support young Aussies. I really hope I didn't miss anyone there. I think I got them. I'm a fan, for sure.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform with one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite.
Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/stereo. netsuite.com/stereo.
Now look, we're heading to Austin this weekend. Let's talk America, first of all. I know you're a fan, a massive fan. You were out in this part of the world in the summer break, weren't you? What is it about the States? Does it remind you of Australia? Just tell us why you love it.
Yeah, it reminds me of home for sure. There is some elements of it which I feel are familiar. But it's, I mean, Austin, I mean, I'll use Austin. So first year I went to Austin, it was probably the first year for all of us, really. I'm not sure Austin was a, let's say, a travel destination for many of us before F1 took us there. And I went into it not knowing really anything about it. And I was just like, oh my gosh, this place is... And even from, I vividly remember at the time, just the way people dressed. You know, I was in these little small music venues or bars, and I remember this girl had like a mechanic's overall on, and I was like, I've never seen someone wear something like that with confidence. I was like, but she looks good. Like, it's awesome. And it was just a really, I don't know, just a nice place where people were so comfortable to be them. And they were also super friendly, very welcoming. And once they heard you had an accent, they were like, oh, what are you doing here? I would love to give you this recommendation. And it's just a warm place. And even now, I mean, you can see my face. I'm smiling, talking about it. Just some places give you this, for lack of a better term, like a good energy. And that's what I certainly get.
Do you get that vibe everywhere you go in the States? I mean, have you got a place on the West Coast somewhere?
Yeah, so California's a place that I've just always loved as well. And
California.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to love. So I do have a place there, and I love it. It's an escape as well. It's a home away from home.
I think we got to the bottom of this. It's the weather, right?
I mean, I was about to say, normally there's sunshine. So if you don't know this about me yet, the four seasons that we need in life are summer, 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 and that's all I ever want.
I finally have Alan Jones bought a place. I remember when he was racing for Williams back in the 80s, early 80s. He bought a place in California because he was fed up with the European winters.
They're tough. And yeah, that's another thing. You can go over Christmas and the weather's great. And there's still a lot in the States I want to go and see and travel to, and places like Montana. Again, kind of get back to a little bit of outback and see, yeah, more of the States style outback. You know, I'm familiar with Australia and I love it. So kind of see what the States has to offer on that front.
Go on then. What is the coolest thing you've done in America? What did you get up to in the summer break? What last Christmas you were out there as well. What did you get up to?
I'm going
to
go blank. Also one thing I thought of, you know, that first that came to my head is some friends have a ranch out there. So went out to the ranch and just rode 110s and explored. And we did like this enduro. We did like a 3-hour ride all up these single tracks up to the top of this kind of peak. And you could see the ocean and it was just beautiful. So that's fun.
Surfing?
Oh, yes. So I surfed for the second time in my life down in San Diego with one of my friends from Perth who was traveling at the time, Curtis. So we got some boards and yeah, we rented a place for two nights and surfed. That was a few years ago.
How does it work that an Aussie has only surfed twice in his life? Oh, I mean, yes. Stereotypes and everything, but...
I know. So growing up, we lived not even 10 minutes from the ocean, from the coast. And I think just...
Let me ask again then.
Yeah, mum and dad weren't ocean people. It was probably as simple as that. So we love looking at the beach and whatever, but we'd never really went to the beach. And so I guess it's a bit like that. And then you kind of get this fear of sharks as well. And I'm not that comfortable with animals in general.
Can I say, is that real, the fear of sharks?
Yeah, for sure. At least growing up it was.
Do you have Steven Spielberg to thank for that? Or is there another reason for it?
I mean, I definitely think Jaws influenced a lot of people, like probably negatively in that respect. So I did watch that film. And if I was already scared of them, then I was most certainly afterwards. But I think then it's something I do want to do more. So I have done it a few times surfing and I love it. Am I still a bit scared of the ocean? Yeah, I am.
That's probably a healthy thing though, isn't it?
Maybe. I was always, I mean, again, I preferred two wheels. Like on a weekend, I would rather go BMX riding or dirt bike riding as opposed to going to the beach and surfing. So yeah, I guess it's land over water. And that was kind of my choice. But in saying that, I do have a little bit of a, call it retirement plan at some point. So when I do finally call it a day with F1, I do want to kind of just do a 3-month surf trip and just basically surf every morning for 3 months and See what
get a
like.
VW camper. Off you go.
Yeah, I've got like this vision. I met up with a friend recently and they've just got into surfing, and just even listening to them speak about it, I was just like, oh, and this friend's older than me. So I was like, all right, if they're starting this late and getting this kind of enjoyment from it, then it's not too late. So that's a bit of a what I'll do the day I retire, if you will.
What is your relationship with racing in the, you know, the day that you retire 5 years, 10 years hence from Formula One? Will you race anything else, or will that be it? Will you do a Nico Rosberg or a Damon Hill and not race anything again?
In my head, that's what I've told myself. And not because I want to think a certain way, but just I think that's how I will feel. But who knows? You know, as I said, with lockdown, I missed it. So I think I'll always do something with, and it might be two wheels. It might just be riding my 110, you know, 5 days a week and getting my kicks out of that. I do feel, or I want to say that I put everything into it so that when I do retire, I'm actually exhausted from it. And I'm like, you know what? I've pretty much poured all of my current existence into this, and it's now time for something else. So I would like to leave with that, if you know what I mean, with that fulfillment that I can move on and pursue whatever else it is in life. So that would be the, at least my idea of it.
Just before we move on, from America, American sports, American food, American
all of it,
all of it, right? Is that what, yeah.
I feel bad how much I talk about America, because I'm like, I feel like I don't want to neglect Australia. It's obvious I love Australia and I love home, but yeah, sorry, go on.
Why not just tell us about you're an NFL fan, right?
So I've got into I've always loved American sport. I mean, I love sports in general. I'm a bit of a sports nut, it's not a sport I followed, you know, as a kid. So NFL is something I've started to take more of an interest in. I went to the Super Bowl, 2020, and it was amazing and awesome. And it was the first live game I'd seen. I went to college football, Texas Longhorns, hook 'em. But this was the first NFL game. And anyway, I was all about it. And I was like, oh, I need to get behind a team. And the jersey needs to look cool. You know, if you're a latecomer into getting into a sport or one of these, like whether it's basketball or a jersey you're going to represent, I was like, at least let it look cool. And I didn't want to go down anything too obvious. And then I was like, the Bills, Buffalo Bills, their jersey looks cool. Then they've got what's called the Bills Mafia, which is basically, call it the Bills fan club. And they're
nuts. You a member?
They are, well, so basically, I think to be a member these days, you've got to put yourself through a table. That's what they do. So anyway, after this, I'll give you some links. But just look up Bills Mafia and you'll see. They're wild and they're loose. And they remind me of my friends back home. So yeah, there's a little bit of me in that.
Talking of shirts that look good, you are entering the fashion world, right? And I believe this weekend, there's a bit of an announcement. Am I right? There is.
So I got...
What do we call it? The Speedway Collection.
The Speedway Collection.
What's
that
all about?
You're well informed.
What's it all about?
So 2020, let's say the team around me, we were talking about doing, clothing for a while, but it was like, I did dabble with it a few years ago, but I was like, let's actually try to build a business and something that is... properly something that I'm invested in and that I care about. So when we started, I was kind of hooked, and all the, you know, group chats, all the email links, I wanted to be connected to it all. And my team's like, look, we'll take care of this. Like, you don't need to put all your time into this. Obviously there's racing and you got other stuff. I was like, no, I want to be involved in this. So to a point where, anyway, so designs, all of it, material, we are very deep in it. And long story short, it's been fun, it's been going really well, and I've enjoyed it more than anything, which is important. And the Speedway Collection it's really a tip of the hat to my love for NASCAR and also the apparel that comes with NASCAR, you know, the big kind of loud shirts with the bright colors. And I'm a fan of, people have seen me before wear like retro Dale Earnhardt shirts and all this, so it's in the theme of that, and like the trucker caps, and so it's cool. It's stuff that obviously I would wear, So it is me and it's got my flavor. But I think the cool thing is seeing people around the world start to wear your stuff. And it's, you know, it's not just at a racetrack. You'll see them. My friends actually sent me a photo of this couple in New York a couple of weeks ago. And he was at a whatever cafe and took a photo of these, I guess, a random couple wearing like two Ricardo shirts. And I was like, how did that end up there?
Does that give you a lot of satisfaction?
Yeah, like more than it probably should. it's crazy. So it's a win-win because I love doing it. And then I do get a lot of satisfaction seeing people wear it, represent it, and I guess enjoy it. So it's fun. And it's you know, potentially, again, something I could do, you know, for years to come and post-career. So that as well, like building stuff like this is really exciting. I'll get you a shirt. You a shirt, mate.
I'll hold you to that. Now let's talk Formula One now. You've done more than 200 races now. Fair few. How does your relationship with F1 change over time and with experience? And, you know, we talked about 2012 when you first went to Austin. Just how does your life and relationship with the sport now compare to back then?
I guess it constantly changes, or I would say it constantly evolves. And I definitely got to a point over the years where I made a point to enjoy, let's say, the experience as a whole, and not just arrive to a race and just be about the race and the track and that's it. So I think Austin actually probably opened my eyes to that, you know, going out to bars and little music venues and actually enjoying the week as a whole, then made the racing experience even better.
Did it make you a better racing driver?
I believe it did, you know, and it worked for me. Would it work for everyone? Probably not, but it just gave me, I just got into the car just happy. I was like, well, last night was awesome and this city's so cool, and I've just got a lot of energy that I've taken from, let's say, these experiences, and I'm going to get in the car now and have even more fun. So yeah, it definitely changes your mindset as well. So that's evolved over time, and so I make a point of enjoying the experience and places we go. And then with the sport itself, it'll probably, till the end, it'll continue to be like a love hate at times.
Is it as extreme as that?
It can be. Again, for me, I speak on behalf of myself. I'm a very competitive, and I say that like it's easy for people to be, oh, of course you're competitive, but no, I am a very competitive person since I was a kid, and it's not just with racing, it can be with anything. It can be with a game of Uno or something like this. I do hate losing, and I think over the years I've become a better loser, if you know what I mean. I've just become more mature.
So if we were playing tennis, would you humour me, or would you want to just rub my face in the dirt?
I'd want to bury you.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah, make no mistake. And and sometimes
all right,
I love...
if we were on those 110s together. Really though, I mean, you're being serious,
oh,
right?
Oh, yeah.
You'd want to absolutely bury me.
Yeah. And I like that I've got that fire in me, and I like that I've got whatever that gene is in me. But sometimes it makes it more painful, obviously, because you dealing with it can be a little harder. But I love it because, again, it shows me that I care. It shows me that I want it. It's powerful, and I use it to my advantage when I can. So, and I think going through, call it the lows of the sport, it makes the highs that much higher, and they last, call it an eternity.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform with one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs, because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite.
Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/stereo. netsuite.com/stereo.
Daniel Ricciardo on course for his first victory since
Redemption
Monaco 2018. He left Red Bull, he went to Renault.
Holy mac and cheese balls, that's another podium.
He's gone to McLaren, he's going to get the victory now. It's McLaren and Ricciardo that win the Italian Grand Prix.
For anyone who thought I left, I never left.
Let's talk Monza then. Are you still somewhere in your mind on a high?
Parts of me, yeah. And I'm choosing to be. I am, because it's, you know, not to a point where I'm walking around with my chest puffed out. It's not that, but I'm just choosing to still appreciate it, I guess, and enjoy it. It had been so long, and yeah, but that high as well, the feeling of Monza and how many, I literally still haven't replied to all the messages. You know, it was insane how many people reached out, and that's just a nice feeling to have. So I feel bad just letting it go like that.
Were the emotions on the podium there comparable to Monaco in 2018?
Yeah. Yeah, I think the only thing that it, let's say, lacked was the atmosphere. You know, there was not a full crowd and all of that. So maybe that was the only difference, but everything else, the emotions, the feeling, the relief, the happiness, all of it. The people around me, the team, the paddock, I was getting pats on the back from people from every different team and from the media. It was just really nice.
What was your reaction to the reaction? Were you quite humbled by it?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's, you know, it does make me proud. Like, I'm not going to deny that. And I will speak, just try to be honest about it and open. But it does make me proud. And it kind of shows me that I'm doing, or I've done something right in the sport, you know, where, because if I win, you know, no one should care more than me about winning, if you know what I mean. But I felt like so many people cared as much as I did. And so many people were as happy as I was. So that's, yeah, as you say, humbling, but it does make me proud, because I'm like, okay, I've obviously gone about this in a good way to have this effect on people. So it's nice, and I think it's definitely genuine, and I think that's probably what makes me proud, is that I feel I've always been in this sport as me. I don't think it's changed me too much over the years.
What was the nicest message you received that you can tell us? Were fellow drivers texting you?
Yeah, I had some from fellow drivers, which is always nice. And again, we competitors.
How do they text? Great victory, you bastard.
Some of them, yeah. But some were just like, you know, like, you deserved it, and really, really happy for you, like totally chuffed for you, like respect for, you know, finding a way to kind of get back to the top kind of thing. So that's cool. Oh, I want to say there's one, but I definitely had some along the lines of, like, you don't know how much joy and happiness you've just given us today. Like, to watch you do that, and after the year you've had, you know, like, we've ridden with you, and it's just like, we're so happy and proud. And that's, that sort of stuff is really, really cool.
And your trophy for that win now sits alongside Senna's at the MTC, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And you were at Adelaide in 1993 as a wee man,
yeah.
But you were there, weren't you? Senna's last victory in Formula One. Does that feel a bit, do you even get emotional seeing that association?
I did, absolutely, when I mean, the emotion was that I didn't really have words, you know, I was speaking very slow and deliberate, because it was emotional. Because as long as I've been doing this, it still feels like the click of a finger. You know, I can take myself back to being a kid and putting F1 in this dream world.
Senna has given us a magnificent demonstration of how to go motor racing today. To win the last Grand Prix of 1993, a magnificent achievement for him, for McLaren and for Ford. And Ayrton Senna wins in Australia to the delight of his fans.
To be there and to see Senna, and I think just to see the trophy and to kind of have these visualizations, I guess, of him picking up that exact trophy on that day. And now for me to have a trophy that I picked up on the top step next to it. I was just trying to draw these, like, I don't know, parallels or whatever you call it. And I was just, it's like, how did I end up here? So I still do pinch myself, which I like. I like that because it does make me appreciate it.
Do you actually remember Adelaide 93? Because you were four.
Yeah.
Do you really remember it?
Well, I do. So there's a photo of me and Dad on the pit wall on like the start-finish straight after all the podium ceremony. And I do have like one photographic memory of basically sitting on the track and looking up at like the pit buildings. So I'm able to picture that now, and that's what I have.
And Daniel, how needed was that win at Monza?
Yeah, made me feel good. It was needed.
Just in the context of the year as a whole.
Yeah, it was needed, like no doubt about it. There was so much good that came from that for me, for people around me. You don't really lose faith in yourself because you know what you're capable of. But if you haven't done it for a while, then of course it's like, and you might not even know it, but it's like, am I not 100% in this corner, or am I at 98 now and I don't even know it? Or like, so you get these at times, maybe these little voices, I guess. But in saying that, I will say I'm quite good at shutting that stuff out and staying pretty strong within myself. But to, I think I knew it, and the truth is I knew it when I led. You know, I got the start, and I as soon as I pulled out of the first chicane in the lead, I remember going out and I had a smile, and I was just like, oh, like the pit crew right now, the garage must be going nuts, like we're leading. And
they were.
They were. But I felt comfortable, and that was all I needed. I was like, yeah, this is not overwhelming for me. This isn't a forgotten feeling. Like this is, in my head, I'm telling myself, this is where I belong. Like, this is where I want to be. And I really drove that race with a comfort and a calmness. And at times I was singing to myself, I was tapping the wheel, I was just enjoying it. And I wanted to enjoy it. You know, when you lead from start to finish, you want to wish the race away. You want it to be over. Because you're like, let's just drop the flag already and let me win this. But I was like, no, I want to be, I guess, in the moment to enjoy all of this. It's been so long. The whole field is trying to catch me right now. I'm the target. I was like, let me enjoy this for a little while.
Do you believe in form for racing drivers?
I will say yes. People might say a different word, but yeah, form, I think in sports is a thing. Again, it might be completely dictated around your let's say external happiness. If you're having a good week, or if you've been having a good month, and if things are well with just your life in general, if family's good or personal life's good, then
I remember Senna saying as much, actually.
Oh, really? Yeah, I think it's goes back to probably Austin, you know, going to bars and venues and then jumping in the car. I'm like, well, I feel good because I had a great time and now I'm getting in the car, and you can drive with a sense of freedom and happiness. And yeah, so that can, let's say, spiral into a run of good form.
I read an interesting quote from the swimmer Adam Peaty recently, you know, multiple gold medal winner. And he says, the mind is the athlete, the body is simply the means.
Mm.
Do you understand that? Can you relate to that?
Absolutely. Yeah, I rate that. Because I can tell from experience that some of my best results have not come from my best week of training, or, you know, I haven't won races because I'm the strongest or fittest driver on the grid every single week. You know, it's some weeks you're sleep deprived with jet lag and whatever. But if you're like a rock up there in your head, then nothing can stop you. I love that. That's why I love watching other sports, because for me, I take the mental aspect out of it. I'm like, okay, what's this guy thinking right now? What are they thinking? And Yeah, tennis is a big one where it's so back and forth.
Is it individual sports that you like the most? Is that where you need it most upstairs?
I've always felt that. I've always been, I've just been drawn to individual sports more so. But I think it sways as well. I'm not saying team sports have it as well. And you see momentum shift and it's cool. But I think the craziest one really is for shifts and back and forths is probably tennis, where you could, have lost 10 points in a row and then you hit three winners. So you just won 3 points in a row and you are now on fire and it can be that quick.
Do you play a lot of tennis as part of your training for Formula One, both mentally and physically?
I mean, I love playing. I don't play often enough just because of time and schedule, but I do.
And you are Emma Raducanu's favourite Formula One driver, you know
that. That's what we do. Yeah. That's what we do. Thanks, Emma. So in lockdown, going back to the farm, we had a table tennis table and we were playing pretty much every day. And I was playing with Michael and we were
trainer
very,
Michael, isn't
yes,
it?
And we were very competitive. And for me, it was, I think skill-wise, we're the same. And in my head, I'm like, whoever's winning is the one who is staying the strongest up here. So, you know, even with one of my best mates, I'm still with the mindset of how can I beat him? How can I
bury him?
Bury him, exactly. So, yeah, and I'm learning about myself through all this. So you can do things along the way for sure.
So Monza was win number 8. And to put that in perspective, that's 3 more wins than Keke Rosberg had in his whole career, and he's a world champion. Do you feel that your talent deserves a world title?
Oh, that's a good question. I say yes, but I don't want to come from a bitter standpoint where, you know, damn it, I should have had this. Like, why don't I have the big trophy? And I don't come at it from that angle. But I mean, I go back to 2014. In my head, my belief is, I could have won the world title that year if we had the means to do so. I think for me to win 3 races when Mercedes was so quick, I'm like, okay, I believe in equal equipment. I was the guy to beat that year. You know, so there's years that have gone where I'm like, if everyone had equal equipment this year, I believe I was on a level that would have got me a world title. But I don't look at that. I mean, even talking about it, I don't actually feel that good about it because I don't want to come at it like, oh, well, yeah, I'm better than who won that year, Lewis or whatever. It's just, I just know that the way I was driving and feeling within myself in those seasons, I was like, yeah.
Has that been your best year so far?
14 was definitely one of them. I think because it was my biggest transition or period. And it was, let's say, my coming out year of getting to the top tier and taking the wins and being the aggressive overtaker and all that. That was definitely my pivotal year. 16 was one where that was another strong one, but it's definitely not a dig at any opponents or anything. It's just, I felt like I was driving very well those years and I could have definitely been in a fight, but there was a time where I was like a little bit bitter at like, well, I should have had a title by now. Like, this sucks and why don't I, like, wrong place, wrong time, or this or that. But yeah, maybe that's the growth in me or the maturity where I don't think that anymore, and I'm still here because I believe I can win a title and I want to win a title, but I'm at peace with whatever happens. As long as I just go out and leave it all on the track, then I'll get fulfillment.
Sebastian Vettel said on this pod actually that his tenure at Ferrari had been a failure because he hadn't won the world title. Is the title your only goal with McLaren? And if you don't get it, will you view it in similar terms?
I'll say no, because if I say I'm at McLaren for 5 years and we don't get a title, I don't want to look back on the 5 years as a failure, because then it's like, well, okay, that's 5 years of my life that I'm kind of just flushing down the toilet. 5 years of your life is a lot of time. So that's maybe the mindset switch that I've made. And it's not, don't get me wrong, it has not made me any softer or less driven or less motivated. but it's I want to enjoy my time here in the sport, and the goal is world champion, and I think that's why I will wake up every morning with a desire to do this, but I don't want that to dictate my whole happiness, because I've been doing it 10 years. I'm not world champion yet, so there's no guarantee that it'll happen. I just don't want to put all my eggs into that basket and then be miserable for the rest of my life because I haven't done it, you know. So winning in Monza was probably all I needed to give me all the happiness in 2021, you know. So that also proved that you can get so much from not just a world title.
Daniel, what about 2022? How much of an opportunity is that for you and for the team? New regs, new car.
It's exciting for the whole sport. You know, for us at McLaren, certainly see it as maybe another opportunity to get closer again. The team has been on an awesome trajectory. So, you know, I've certainly felt that and been a part of that this year. So the plan is to continue on that. With these rule changes, I think there's a bigger opportunity to, let's say, make a bigger step. But every team has the same opportunity. Every team's thinking the same. So it's not just us. But the thought of it makes me smile. And I think what's been really, I'm kind of going back to a previous question, but you said, what did the win do for me? And you know, also what it did for the team was just as powerful, you know, because the team's been on this trajectory. They've had podiums, but to get the win, let's say, confirms a lot of belief that the team have in themselves to get it done. And even going to the mechanics, we had the fastest pit stop of that race in Monza. To do that when the team is not notoriously known for the fastest pit stops, so to execute that in probably the highest pressure pit stop of the year, that is what I took from that weekend. Like, man, we've got a group of winners here. And that makes me really excited.
So you feel you're ready as a team?
Yeah.
To challenge for a world championship?
Yeah. And the truth is, Monza proved everything. Because it's the win, but it's everything that happened around that that showed that no one cracked. Like, no one cracked. That is really important.
How does the reality of racing for McLaren compare to the dream that Zach and Andreas sold you?
It matches. It really does. You know, that's, I think they've got such a good balance between themselves, and I think they've done such a good job at bringing this team where it is. And, you know, I can't speak of, you know, previous McLaren days. Obviously, I wasn't here, so I'm definitely not taking shots there. But, you know, I see the culture they're trying to bring in, and I hear, obviously, it's different to what it used to be. And maybe it also more fits in line with me and my personality, but it's really good. And, you know, it's, of course, when you're trying to sign with a team, or a team's trying to get you, yeah, they're going to try to at least sell you the dream. But I think there was a lot of reality in this as well. And I'm living through that as they said at the moment. So I'm very happy.
What kind of a boss is Zach? How does he compare?
American.
Yeah.
Full of life.
How does he compare to previous ones? Helmut. Can you compare Zach Brown and Helmut Marko for me right now?
I mean, their personalities are very different. You know, Helmut's a man of few words. Zach probably talks as much as me. But, you know, then the similarities is they're both hungry. And yes, they might show it in different ways through their personality, but they are both so hungry to do this. I mean, Helmut, everyone knows, you know, for him to be still traveling to every race doing this, like, that speaks for itself. And I'll always respect and admire Helmut for that. And Zach is, you know, he wants to do it. He loves racing. You know, he's the biggest fanboy, but in the most positive way. You know, it gives him the desire to be better, to build a better team. And then Andreas has that, let's call it that German efficiency. And he's got that killer instinct that you need in a team to kind of have that authority, but have that also have that trust in the people around you.
What's his greatest quality? And I'm talking about Andreas now. Is it that killer instinct? I love that description.
Yeah, I think it is that. I think it is that. It's that killer instinct, but it's also, he's a guy that will tell you wrong from right, but he also, in a way, no one's intimidated to go and talk to him about, hey, I have an issue with this. You know, so he doesn't create a barrier. He doesn't create I don't know if it's the right term, but a hierarchy or a position of, no, you can't speak to me, speak to that guy. He welcomes, call it constructive criticism, because he wants to build a better team. So yeah, you know he's, let's say, the boss in many respects, but he's also a guy that will listen to you and help build this team to something better.
And how was he with you when you're having one of your tougher moments earlier in the year?
I mean, from my point of view, very good, because there was certainly a lot of support, and it wasn't trying to point the finger, you know, on day one. It's like, come on, we expected you to be, you know, top three by now. Why aren't you? There was a lot of a process to it, understanding, okay, what is it that you need? What can we do to help you, you know, get more confidence with this car, get more feeling, speak to me, tell me how I can do this. So that was very good. But then obviously, you know, you get to a point where the results maybe still aren't coming, and it's like, okay, look, it's been a while now. What else can we do? Tell me, I need you to be honest with me, open, you know, do you feel what I feel? What's holding you back? So it's these honest conversations that are really important, where it's, let's say it's constructive. And if it's positive, negative, it's still constructive. And it's all about how we as a team can be better. And, you know, I say he, it's Andreas, but it's McLaren want me to do well. You know, they wanted me in the team and they want me to do well. So it's, how can they help me get to that place? And that level of support's been really good.
They were only ever 100% loyal in the media as well.
Yeah. And look, I'm all for someone coming at me and telling me I've done, can I swear on here? A bad job. Let's say a bad job, or I need to pull my finger out. You know, so that, of course, I'm big enough to handle that, which they will tell me if they need to.
So we've got six races left, starting in Austin. Oh, no, you're counting. No, have I got this wrong?
I think it's, yeah. It is.
What can you do? Because it seems to me that McLaren have got their mojo back. You've got a really fast racing car. Are you going to start getting in the way of Max and Lewis and causing them all sorts of grief that they really don't want as the championship really gets boiling away?
Getting in the way means winning, then of course I'll do that. Look, I always treat every, let's say, car, once the helmet's on, like it's another car. And if it's in front of me and I've got a chance to gain a position, of course the mindset is to go. Would I send a complete dive bomb? I don't even, well, actually I probably would. If I thought,
seriously,
if I
down
thought,
the inside of Lewis
a move
Max.
Was on, then I'd go for it. Because it's also, whether that happened in the last race of the year or the first race, it shouldn't change, you know, your racecraft. And it's also part of the race. You know, things happen. And if a driver tries to go for a move, then it's also up to the other driver to assess the risk and the situation. So put it this way, I don't plan on racing them any different. But of course, like I don't think I'm reckless anyway. So it's probably not even one that I need to address. Like I obviously don't want to get in the way of their fight, in terms of I would hate to be involved in a negative way, but it won't change the approach.
Once a honey badger, always a honey badger, right?
That is true. That is true. So let's see what happens.
Well, Daniel, it's been fantastic to have you on the show again. Thank you for your time. Is it back to Oz for Christmas this winter? Or
yes.
Even if you've got to go into quarantine.
Quarantine, yeah. Look, I chose not to last year, but now it's been, by Christmas, it'll be over 18 months that I haven't been home. And obviously no one's been able to travel, so I haven't seen mum and dad for 18 months. And my sister's got, you know, niece, nephew, and yeah, I'm close with family. Like that's how we are. It's how we were brought up. So to not see them for that long is hard. And it's probably the first year in my life I've actually had homesick. So yeah, if it means quarantining, I mean, I don't agree with it, but if that's what it takes, then yeah, I'm going to bite the bullet this year.
Energizing. Daniel, thank you very much for your time. Best of luck with everything.
Thank you, mate.
And the shirt sales.
Yeah, one's coming your way. Tell me your size.
What an engaging guy. All conversations with Daniel are fun, but he said so much of interest in this chat. I found the description of his ever-evolving relationship with Formula One fascinating. And I enjoyed hearing him talk about his best years in Formula One so far. He was electric in 2014, getting 3 wins in his first year with Red Bull. And how interesting that he thinks he could have won the world title that year in the right car. Then he talked about his goals with McLaren, and I loved his reference to Andreas Seidel's killer instinct. Andreas has been a guest on this podcast already, and I can see what Daniel means. Daniel, thanks again for your time. It was great to catch up, and I might hold you to that Speedway Collection shirt. It looks great. Now, as ever, please remember to send in any thoughts or stories on Daniel. Were you at Monza when he won for McLaren? Or did you see him win in 2014? Or have you bumped into him in the street? Let me know, and remember, I'll read out the best ones next week. Which brings me on to what you sent in about Lawrence Stroll after last week's episode. We've had a lot of feedback about that show. So let's start with this from Fani Kamineni. F1 paddocks are always home to charismatic leaders who carry an aura around them. For example, Bernie, Ron, Eddie, Helmut, Charlie. While I thought we were heading towards a more corporate style of leadership, Mr. Stroll certainly brings that allure back as a strong leader. That's a very good point, Fani. Lawrence is more old school in his approach, isn't he? Next up, let's hear from Hassim Peacock, who said this. Hello, Tom. Thanks for the chat with Lawrence. It was inspirational to hear his plans and comprehend his dedication and strive to succeed. Brand and team are in incredible hands. Well, thanks for that, Hassim. And yes, his passion is infectious, isn't it? And then there's this from Sava. It's great to finally see the human side to Lawrence Stroll and to hear from him directly instead of through articles full of speculation. I learned a lot about him today. He's a fascinating individual, and I definitely took away a thing or two from this interview. There's nothing quite like hearing it from the horse's mouth, is there, Sava? And thanks for your message. And let's end with this from JB. I'll be honest, I was skeptical when Lawrence came to what was Force India. But since listening to Beyond the Grid, I've changed my opinion of him. I have a great respect for his work ethic and his commitment to the sport that I love. That's great to hear, JB, and thanks for getting in touch. Now, as ever, we got lots more messages, but I'll stop there in the interests of time. Thank you to everyone who wrote in. We love getting your messages and we read them all. Well, that's it for another week. I hope you enjoyed hearing from Daniel Ricciardo, and don't forget to send in your thoughts and stories on him. Otherwise, I'll see you next week with another great guest from the world of Formula One. Beyond the Grid is produced by Formula One in association with Audioboom Studios. Until next time, keep it flat out.